If you could meet one squad mate in real life, who would you choose?
God. Like, the sole reason for me meeting a squad mate would be for one purpose only.
Hello everyone and welcome back to the channel. My name is Oren and this is another creator interview. Unfortunately, this is the last interview for interview week. But we are going out with a bang. This is such a fun interview that I had with Alex, also known as Mr. Halton. We talked about Mass Effect, about his creator journey, and a lot of other fun stuff, and also answered some fan questions that his audience asked us. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this interview. Before I send you over to watch the interview, please consider checking out my Patreon. It's patreon.com/TheOrenCohen. And also, I have to apologize because my audio quality during this interview is not what you're used to, like this. Unfortunately, my mic said bye-bye and Riverside compensated by choosing the mic of the camera. So unfortunately, that's not the best audio quality, but I hope it doesn't distract you too much. And also, like and subscribe to the channel if you aren't already subscribed. And without further ado, enjoy the interview. Mr. Halton, also known as Alex, thank you so much for being here. How are you doing today?
Thank you. I'm doing pretty swell. Still recuperating from my surgery, but I guess it's okay. It's in my lower back, so it's kind of an, I have problems sitting usually, but it's better now.
Amazing. In this interview, I want to take you back to your past and grow from there. So please, can you tell me a bit about Mr. Halton, also known as Alex, before you started your channel, Mr. Halton, and started streaming on Twitch?
So, well, I don't stream on Twitch that often, but yeah, but being mainly a YouTuber before I started with that, I don't know, like I'm kind of a boring guy. I didn't really have much going on. I just basically I've always been interested in media of different kinds. I when I went to college or whatever you call it, high school or when I was in my 20s, or I don't know what you call it in English, but here in Sweden, at least, when you're 20, you go to, I think it's high school or college. But anyway, so there I educated myself on different forms of media, which entails like Photoshop and what you're doing now, like interviewing stuff and video creation. I never got really an interest, in it. And as I'm 30 now, it almost took like 9 years before I found an interest in it. I just never thought that I could be good at it. And what I've basically done up until I started my like uploading videos is I just been working as a regular normal guy at IKEA. So being Swedish, it just fits perfectly. So that's basically what I've been doing. I've been with my fiance now for, let's see, 11 years, I think. Well, yep. We're doing pretty good, but before then we didn't really do much. I like to go to the gym, work out, maybe go for a walk in the park, play a lot of games, play a lot of Mass Effect.
Okay.
I don't know. There's really nothing to say, I think.
Okay, we'll get to Mass Effect later. I have a lot of strong opinions. I do want to ask you, what's the pivotal moment when you decide to start a YouTube channel?
The thing is, the channel that I have now, that one I started back in 2010, 2011, I think. And the first thing I uploaded there was the Reaper sound effects video, which got a lot of views because people just love the sound of the Reapers. And I never uploaded anything on that channel. I just had that going. It wasn't until actually, I think it was maybe a few months before the next Mass Effect teaser. No, it ju was just a month before. Jacksepticeye, Sean McLaughlin, he checked out my Reaper sound effects video, and that video just skyrocketed in views because people were like,
Oh.
"Oh my God, Jesus Christ!" Because he loves sound effects and he loves the sound of the Reapers, so he checked it out in one of his videos. So I was like, "Ah, oh, man, I can't let this opportunity pass by." So I was like, I gotta start making some videos. So I started making, you know, Mass Effect videos because it was Mass Effect. But I didn't really get much views. I had like a few, you know, 10 or 15 views or so. But since I already had that video going, it started to build up slowly. And I didn't think that I would be able to, you know, have a sort of a salary from it, but it grew with the Legendary Edition release. And then it just, you know, just blew up from there. Sure, I'm not like PewDiePie or, you know, Penguin Zero or anything like that, but I am pretty proud of where the channel is right now. It took a lot of grinding, though. It's saying Mass Effect almost every day kind of grow. It becomes tiring after a while, but I do. I'm still sort of baffled that I was able to create a channel mostly focused on Mass Effect.
Amazing. And if we're like talking about the topic of your channel, so you mentioned that first boost that you got from Jacksepticeye on your Reapers video, sound effect video. But from then on, you had opportunities to like talk about other games. So why sticking with Mass Effect along the way?
Well, mainly because I know the universe so well. I think I know Mass Effect so well compared to basically any other game I played. Like, sure, I am a huge gamer. I played a lot of World of Warcraft in my day. I played a lot of God of War, which is why I also talked about God of War for a while, because I still felt like I had enough knowledge to talk about the games. So I did that as well. But Mass Effect is such a huge, expansive universe with so much lore and stuff going on and so many different choices. So I was like, this is just, it's not an infinite source of content, but it is close to almost.
Amazing. There's so much to talk about, like Mass Effect lore, like the words and worlds and all of those amazing stories that we don't see in like storylines in the Mass Effect games. But if you go to the codex and you see a lot of stuff over there too. Yeah. If we're talking about Mass Effect, let's do short questions about the decisions you made in your first playthrough. And, you know, and also like general questions about Mass Effect, because I'm also a huge Mass Effect nerd and I'd love to get your opinions. So first one, Paragon or Renegade?
Almost certainly always Paragon.
Okay, same. Who do you sacrifice on Vermeer?
Mostly, I think it's a tie now that I think about it. Mostly I've sacrificed Ashley just because I think she's kind of a, can I say?
You can say it. You can say it.
She's kind of a bitch, you know, at the start of the game. So I never, when I started playing Mass Effect, I just never could, you know, find any sort of common ground with her. So I always just sacrificed her because I liked how Kaidan is always sort of this nice guy. He hasn't done anything bad. He's just a victim of, you know, experimentation and stuff like that. So I like Kaidan a little bit better. I like Ashley more today, though, but usually it's always been Ashley that's been sacrificed.
Okay. Who's your favorite love interest?
That would have to be, despite all the people, or despite all of the community uploads and all of the videos I've done on Tally, Liara is going to remain as my favorite love interest. She was my baby blue from the start. And I can't, you know, it's just, I don't know what the thing is with Liara. She's just amazing.
There's something so satisfying about doing like an entire playthrough of all the three games and like stay faithful to Liara all the time.
Yeah.
And then like when you get to Mass Effect 2 and she's not there, like as someone in your like entourage, it's so like, but now I need to go and do the Lair of the Shadow Broker and right. I will have lots of opportunities to visit her again.
Yeah.
Okay, who are the two squad mates you take on missions more than any others?
I was about to say Garrus, but that's not really true. I usually, it depends, because the game, all of the three games have different squad mates. Well, in Mass Effect 1, it was always Liara and Rex. And in Mass Effect 2, it's Grunt. And I like to bring Morden a lot, so I think those are usually the ones I usually pick, because I just love how... No, wait. Morden and Legion. Yes, because I love Legion so much. And then in the third game, it's Edie. Definitely Edie, almost every time. And then Javik, most of the time. So those are my picks.
Okay.
For each game.
Legion is an interesting choice, because you don't have a lot of playtime with Legion.
But I went around that, you know. I went with the save file editor, and I put him in the game earlier, so you get much more content with him, because there's so much unused dialogue.
That's amazing.
There's so many missed opportunities if you don't... I don't understand why they cut so much of the dialogue, because, you know, if you bring him to the Citadel at the beginning... Even the council reacts to him being there, and he even has his own dialogue. So it's like, I don't know why they cut that, because his perspective is one of the most interesting things about Mass Effect. I think it rhymes with the overall story of Mass Effect because of the synthetics versus AI thing. So I think having Legion throughout the entire game brings a lot to the table.
That's so awesome. I never knew that you could like use a save editor
to
like put get earlier. Legion.
You should try it. It's really cool.
I should. Wow. That's awesome. I'll have to like ping you about how to do that later.
Okay.
Okay. What DLC from the trilogy, original trilogy, you liked the most?
DLC. I think... I'm going to be weird here and say Leviathan, just because I love the mythology of the Reapers. I love the mythology of the Leviathans, just these mythical godlike beings. Yeah. I'd say Leviathan just because of that. There are, like, Lair of the Shadow Broker is one thing.
Yeah.
And I think most people would say Lair of the Shadow Broker just because of how detailed the entire DLC is. But Leviathan, just hands down, even if it's a bit, you know... It gets a little bit boring at times with the investigation, but it's so mysterious, and you don't know what the Leviathan is and what it looks like. And then when you find out, it's so cool.
Yeah, there's something mystic about Leviathan, like more than any other. Okay. And the last one here. How do you think Andromeda compares to the original trilogy?
Ooh, thing is, I haven't played Andromeda since such a long time. I played through the entirety of Andromeda when it released, and I didn't actually think it was that bad. I just think that, like, my honest opinion is that I think the bugs and the facial animations and the animations and then the script, I mean, a lot of the things about the game was just, it was just subpar when you compare it to the Mass Effect trilogy, to the original quality of it. There was, you know, the things like with them not having more than two new races that you could like speak to was like the Ket, and then we have the what are they called again? Jarl's race. I don't know. I just found them so uninteresting. They kind of look the same. There's not a lot there going on. But then I know that they fixed the game a lot, and I think I played through most of it one more time after that. But that was also a few years ago. But compared to the Mass Effect trilogy, I think it still had problems with its scripts. And the characters are just not as memorable. Even if you compare Andromeda to the first Mass Effect game, I still think that the dialogue is better. The script is better. The main villain is better. It's unfortunate that Andromeda fell so flat for a lot of people. But I also think that Andromeda, people have been kind of too hard on it lately. I think it's not as bad as I thought back in the day, now that I have a little more perspective on it. But, you know, it's not as good as the original trilogy, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think that Andromeda in some ways was a victim of a bad first impression.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like there's so much that I liked about the game, but in like objective hindsight, there's something that feels incomplete about the game itself. Like, I was so hyped for the whatever they wanted to create, whether it was
Quarian DLC.
Yeah, Quarian DLC. So I didn't know if it was going to be an expansion or a DLC, but I was so waiting for that. And then they said, no, that's not happening.
Yeah, it was unfortunate. I was actually also somewhat excited for that, but yeah.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
Okay, I have some other questions for you here. In terms of like your journey as a content creator, were there in the beginning when you just started the channel, or even like in the first few months, even after you got that boost, were there any struggles or doubts that you thought, maybe this isn't for me, maybe this is not going to work?
All the time. Yeah, definitely. Like, I still feel that sometimes, just because at times when you're like dry on ideas and you feel like you've been repeating yourself way too many times, the amount of theory videos I've made, like at the point you've been so creative that you get like, oh my God, like the next thing I'm going to talk about is going to sound so crazy. It's never really true though. That's the thing. You always worry that your video is going to be shit, or that, you know, that you're just going to run out of ideas. But usually there are dry periods where things aren't going as well as you want them to. But then again, I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, getting a good night's sleep, or getting a week's good, you know, night's sleep, you know, getting your food in, going out for a walk, trying to distance yourself sometime. To not constantly think of the grind, because then it becomes too much like work, and you don't really want YouTube to become a job, really, because you want it to be fun. But there, for sure, like I still doubt it sometimes, but then it usually gets solved whenever I've made a video that I'm, you know, somewhat happy with, and it's a video that does somewhat well. But definitely, yeah. So I think most people go through that whenever they're starting up, especially if they haven't done YouTube at all before. There's going to be like a lot of doubts, because you're thinking like, oh man, I hope I get like 100,000 views on my first video, and then I can start calling YouTube my new thing. But that's never the case. You kind of, usually most of people have to grind really hard to get to that spot. But it's just, you know, look back at your old videos and look at what you can improve, like sound quality, your microphone, your camera, everything, your lighting. So yeah, but to answer your question, yeah, there are days.
Okay. When do you see yourself, like, for lack of a better term, taking off?
That's a good question. I think in some ways I would say that my channel has already kicked off somewhat, especially considering that I just started a little more than a year ago. So I think getting up towards, what is it, 34,000 subscribers in a little more than a year, I think that's pretty good. If anybody takes off, that's such a hard question to answer, because I would consider taking off to be somewhat of a monetary thing, you know? If you make enough money to like quit your job, then that's when you take off in my books. But the thing is, like, I know several content creators or YouTubers that have like millions of subs, but they only get like 10 to 15,000 views per video. And that's not usually enough to sustain a somewhat wealthy, you know, lifestyle or whatever, or, you know, even just living off of it. So taking off, I would say if I can get 100,000 views per every video that I make, that's what I consider myself really taking off. So I think that's the baseline for when you've succeeded on YouTube, 100,000 views per video.
Okay. Amazing that you have a goal, like a tangible goal for yourself. That's great. Okay. If you had to start content creation from scratch today, what would you do differently?
Invested in a good microphone, shotgun microphone, definitely, because it like compresses the sound so well. But I guess try to be more active when I talk, because my first videos, I was very, you know, this monotone voice, it sounds boring. And I think I would either invest in a new camera to, you know, have a good picture. Like now I'm just using a webcam, and I'm always just using a webcam. So I think I would buy a good source of lighting as I have now, a good shotgun mic or a mic altogether that has good filters. And started writing every video with a script, because that I didn't do that from the beginning. I just started talking into the mic, but I noticed that my audience retention was crap. So like it didn't work because you keep saying ums and ums and ums all the time. But what I did instead is I started writing scripts. So that's what I basically would do. Mic, good light source, somewhat of an okay camera, write my ideas down on paper or on notepad, you know, record it. There's a few steps that I would do differently than when I started, and just keep going.
Amazing. As a fellow English second language creator, I can say that, like, for me, I always have like these ums and ahs and all that when I create videos. But then when I actually get to the end of the video and I know what I want to say, and if I do it again, there's like 90% less ums and ahs because I'm focused on what I'm saying, because I know what I want to say now.
Practicing does a lot.
Yes. And also like scripting, I'll expose myself and say that I only put like bullet points if I'm creating a video that isn't an interview like this one. Like I have bullet points of the things that I want to say. And then like I create the video as I explained before, like doing it from then and then realizing what I want to say and then like actually recording and doing the thing. But yeah, so like, do you have like, did you develop a specific way of scripting your videos, or is that like, how detailed do you get when trying to script a future video?
I write everything down that I'm going to say in the video, like word for word. Everything that I say in every video basically is 100% scripted. So,
wow. Okay.
So, you know, because I'm Swedish, I tend to, you know, mess up on my pronunciations and whatnot. So I do several takes sometimes. But that's also the thing, because I've gotten so used to using Adobe Premiere, like, you know, cutting away all the ums and, you know, accidental mispronunciations and stuff like that. That's become such child play, so it goes so quickly. I think if I record like a 12-minute video, just cutting away all the errors and whatnot, it takes me maybe 10 minutes more to cut away everything that is not supposed to be there, to time everything right. So I guess like practice makes perfect is that to get good at editing, I would say. Get into editing from the very get-go and get Adobe Premiere, because it's just the best editing software there is. It's just so simple. You know, of course, there's a lot of detail in it. You can do a lot of stuff in it. And a lot of people are terrified of using Premiere because there's so much stuff you can do. But really, if you're just an amateur, you can get really good at it in just a few weeks.
I don't use Premiere. I've heard a lot of good things about it, but
you should try it.
Yeah, I've been using for years now. I've been using Camtasia, and like once you get used to something, like it works for me, and like, but maybe I don't know. Maybe Adobe Premiere can actually make life even easier. I did find like even like today, a few hours before we are recording this interview, I found a piece of software that I'm not sponsored for, so I'm not going to say its name, but it's going to like, it takes the audio of any video that you create and it shows you the audio as text. And then you can, in the click of a button, you can remove all hesitations, which is the professional name for ums and ahs. And then take that piece of audio and put it back into your video.
And that's like, so weird.
Yeah, and like cut the video correctly with the audio. So
it does that automatically.
Yes, you just click a button, remove hesitations.
Damn.
I didn't try it yet. I'll have to try it. I have like six, after this one, I have six interviews to
edit. Oh, damn.
So it's going to be a good way to practice.
Yeah.
Okay, what other advice do you have for beginning content creators if they want to create videos about video games, even in your niche, Mass Effect, or just any other, like starting on YouTube in general? What did you learn that you can impart on your fellow content creators?
So yeah, as I said before, like the mic part is definitely the most important thing. Try to get good footage, high quality footage if you can. Preferably play through the game that you're talking about so you can record footage. Sometimes you can borrow, you know, content from other YouTubers, but just remember to put their names in the credits as well, just to make sure that they get some views as well. I'd say that there's a lot of small little details, you know, to make your videos as good as they can be. And I'm not saying that my videos are like the best videos ever. I can still improve in different areas. But one example is like the music. If you're going to be making a sort of showcase video, or, you know, where you talk about stuff like I do, make sure that the music doesn't overtake your voice, because that is an issue that I see all the time. Several content creators that are huge still has way too overblown music, and you can still see comments, you know, talking about them in their videos, like the music is too loud, could you turn it down? And they never do. So that's the thing. Try to turn down the music as to not have just an empty, you know, void whenever you stop talking. And Mike, I think I said that already. Just don't give up and try to make sure that people stay as long as possible in your videos. I think Mr. Beast talked about it that as well. The most important part is just trying to keep people on, like, interested in your video all the time. That's really hard to do. Like, I don't always get 70% retention on my videos. Like, usually it's between 50 or 60 or something, but that's great. Well enough. 50 to 60 is pretty good, but that's also one huge change since I started scripting my videos, because when I didn't script my videos, I had like 30% retention. But then as soon as I started scripting my videos, I had like 50 to 60. And try to keep people's attention by showing new footage, maybe not between every 5 to 10 seconds, but somewhere between there, because people have such short attention spans. It's crazy. When I started doing that, that also started working very well, you know, not having static shots. You don't want too much static shots. You want shots that keep moving, keep people interested. If you're showing a picture, just show it for a few seconds, then shift. You know, people get bored, and as soon as they get bored, they're just going to click off your video. So I think that's the most important thing. That's also why editing is so important, is trying to keep people interested. So try to keep people's attention.
Okay. Would you say that, like, doing what you described, like keeping people's attention every like 5 to 10 seconds, would you say that even like a new thing on the screen is enough and not like necessarily B-roll?
No, I think that the thing you're talking about usually has to be connected to what you're showing. Because I've also seen that from a lot of content creators, that they use a lot of B-roll that's just gameplay, you know, of said game. But I, like for myself, I get bored whenever I see that. Even if the narrator has a really good voice, I still get bored if he's talking about something and it's not really related to the subject. So you may, you know, if I'm talking about Mass Effect, right? If I'm talking about Mass Effect 4 and I start showing footage of me just shooting bad guys in Mass Effect, and I'm not talking about shooting people in Mass Effect,
yes,
then I think that that's a problem, because people usually lose interest because you're not showing what you're talking about. Because if I talk about like the Krogans and the Genophage and whatnot, it's better if I show the Krogans and footage of the Genophage or something like that, because it connects people to whatever you're talking about. That's also one thing that I've noticed is super, super important. A lot of people just don't do that. So I'd say that's another key.
Okay, amazing. Now let's do some fan questions. Do you think any of the good characters could come back as enemies or opponents in the next game?
Ooh, that's a good one. Sure, it's possible. I mean, it happened in Mass Effect 3. Like, if you don't help Jack, for example, with saving her from the school and the students, then she becomes a phantom. So that's like an Easter egg. And then if you choose to save Morinth instead of Samara, she becomes a Banshee at the end of Mass Effect 3. So like, I think that could be possible. I don't think that Bioware would dare to, like, say, example, bring Garrus back as a sort of a fallen hero. I think people would be super pissed. It doesn't matter if it would be Garrus or anyone else in the squad. I think people would just go haywire. And I have a hard time seeing how they could write that. The strange thing is, I would actually think that the most likely one there would be Liara, because she's the Shadow Broker. She's like the most powerful person in the galaxy. And if she has like a plan to make the galaxy better, then I could assume maybe they could write her in as a villain. But most people wouldn't like that very much, because a lot of people love Liara because she's a love interest, you know. Yeah. But it would be sort of like Morrigan, right? Because she was also like a villain in Dragon Age, sort of, I think. Not really, but I can't really remember. I think she became sort of a villain in Dragon Age 2.
She was like a little bit of a neutral.
Yeah, okay, yeah, something like that. Maybe like a chaotic individual, but I don't think that they would do that with any of the squad mates, no. It's possible, but I don't see how.
I love the idea of like Liara going the Cerberus angle of trying to do the right thing for the galaxy, but doing it ruthlessly.
Could be really cool to see, actually, but I'm afraid that... I'm afraid that most people would be super pissed, and I don't think that Bioware would commit to that, actually.
Okay. What's the hardest decision for you in the trilogy if you were playing a kind of honest run as opposed to Paragon or Renegade?
If I'm being completely honest and not just... The thing is, like, I'm usually playing just like how I would feel myself. That's why I usually play very... Paragon, oh, I'm such a good guy. It's just, generally I have a really hard time dealing out punishment or being a dick. So, it's just not who I am in daily life. So I guess the hardest decision I would say is, I think it's the Vermeier choice, because it's just two people that they're really good people, both of them either way. So I think that's like, just the worst choice to make. I think the Genophage is like, of course you cure the Genophage, of course you save the Rachni Queen. She's not evil. She's just, she's just a misunderstood creature. There's a lot of those that are, just of course-isms. But the Vermeier choice is probably the one that is the hardest, yes.
Okay. Would you play ME3 multiplayer with your viewers? It could be a very funny experience.
I mean, I would like to, but the thing is that maybe during my Twitch streams once or twice. The thing is that I want to play new games and not necessarily just Mass Effect on my Twitch streams, but I would probably play Mass Effect 3 multiplayer. The thing is, like, since I've gotten so used to the Legendary Edition and like graphics and the fluidity and... everything about the Legendary Edition, I have a really hard time getting into Mass Effect 3, the original one, again, because it's just the lesser version, so it's hard for me to get into it. But I maybe.
Okay. Yeah, let's not make any promises, audience. Yeah. What is your favorite part of content creation?
Seeing the fan reactions to the videos. I think that's my favorite part. Like, recording is one thing, writing a script is one thing. Like, a lot of that can get pretty, it can get pretty grinding or grindy, but whenever I see that my viewers like my videos, that's always cool. My most favorite is, of course, seeing the views spike. That's like the coolest feeling, and you just nailed it right on the head, and you're so super proud of yourself. You can just rest throughout the day, keep reading comments, liking comments and commenting yourself. It's just fun to engage with people generally. That's probably the most fun thing about content creation. Reading others' ideas and seeing their ideas pop up from your ideas, and you getting ideas from your fans. It's, I think, yeah, definitely the community aspect is the most fun.
Yeah. Oh, this one is funny. What the hell even Mr. Hawthorne mean?
Why do people keep asking me that? That's such a strange question. It's super simple. My last name is Hawthorne, Mr. Hawthorne. It's like, okay, so I get it that people aren't used to the last name because it's not a very regular name in Sweden either. It's pretty irregular. I think the name comes from, if somebody from Sweden knows about the origins of Hulten, please correct me. But if I remember correctly, it was the name of an old count or something like that. So you're supposed to say it like Hultén. Not Hulten, but it's because it's supposed to sound all, you know, royally, whatever, I think. But it's just the last name. My old boss kept calling me that whenever we got into meetings. He was like, hey, Mr. Hulten, you know, like in The Matrix.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's like, so it just kind of stuck. And when I was thinking about, I should probably change my channel name because I don't remember what name I had before on the channel, but I need to make something clever. So I'm like, Mr. Hulten, I guess. I guess that's, why not?
Now you know.
Yeah. There's no real secret to it.
If you could meet one squad mate in real life, who would you choose?
God. Like, the sole reason for me meeting a squad mate would be for one purpose only. Like, I think all of the tallymancers are gonna get like really pissed if I don't say Tally. One part of me would say Tally, but I also want to say Liara because, I mean
Liara.
Come on, come on, you know. But that's the thing. Since I already have a girlfriend, like it wouldn't be possible. So I think that would be Garrus, definitely. Mm. Okay. Just because, you know, Garrus, he's a bro. So I think he would be a pretty good buddy, pretty good friend. He'd watch your ass, protect your ass all the time. He'd be there if you have any moral, you know, as a moral compass, maybe. I don't know. He'd probably be a pretty good friend. But for the sole purpose of that question, I would say Liara for doing things.
And, you know, like, it doesn't matter that you have a girlfriend, because with Liara, you can all embrace eternity together. All
right. Threesome. Yay. Here we go.
Okay. And, okay. Favorite song in the trilogy?
I'd say the original Mass Effect theme. The one that starts off when you start the game, or like the intro song, you know, the one that builds up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd say the original one. It just makes me all teary eyed whenever I hear it. It's just so good. That's like the main overture of Mass Effect, in my opinion. Leaving Earth is awesome. You know, the boom, 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 boom. You know, it's a bit too tragic and sad for me. Whenever I think of Mass Effect, I always think of the beginning song. Makes you think of exploration and journeying to space to meet aliens. It's like, that's it.
Yeah. And also, like, the beginning of Mass Effect 3 is very tragic, like you said. It's also very traumatic. Like,
yeah.
You're like, okay, I'm leaving Earth and I am watching all of my loved ones dying in the process.
Like, right. It's horrible. Like, that's one of the reasons why I don't like, I love the song, but the situation it's played in, it's just so horrible. So that's why it's not my favorite. I want to be inspired. So yeah, I'm going with the main overture of Mass Effect.
Yes. Okay. Another question like that popped up into my head right now is actually, which game from the trilogy is your favorite?
I don't think I have one, actually. A lot of people have asked me that, and I always give different answers every time. Sometimes I say Mass Effect 1, sometimes I say Mass Effect 2, sometimes I think Mass Effect 3. But that's just because I consider all three games to be like one game, because it is, you know, it's just such a seamless journey between all of the games. So I'd say that all three are kind of my favorites. They all evolve. Like Mass Effect 1 evolves in such a good way into Mass Effect 2, and then Mass Effect 2 evolves really well into Mass Effect 3. The only bad things with the third game is, like, of course, the heavily debated ending, and that it was somewhat rushed, but like a lot of things were fixed in Mass Effect 3 that was just, you know, improved upon from Mass Effect 2. Like, it's not as stale anymore. You can roll around. The combat is much better. You know, biotic and, you know, detonators and explosions and whatnot. It's just the gunplay, the story, it just, you know, it just builds up. It's like three different seasons of a show.
Yes.
I think it's basically one big game for me.
I remember you mentioned Mass Effect 3's ending, and I remember playing it for the first time after it came out. This was before the Citadel DLC came out.
Yeah.
And I was like, when the ending happened, I remember sitting in front of the computer and I was like, what just happened?
Yeah.
What happened? Like, I didn't understand the ending. I didn't understand what happened.
I sat there as well for like 10 minutes. That's the first time I've ever, and I think it's the only time I've ever in any game ever up until today, I had the exact same reaction. I just sat looking at my screen for like 5 minutes straight, and I was like sitting like this. And I didn't know what to do. Like, I didn't know what to think. And then I started to search for it, like looking it up. And I just finished it whenever a lot of other people had finished it. And holy shit, it was a shit show. People were like pissed, complaining. It was like, whoa. It's like the internet was set on fire. It was a crazy experience to read all of the vitriol and the hatred and anger. And then we had all the content creators like Jeremy Johns, you know, like when I watched his video the first time on his thoughts about the game, I was like, yes, yes, I feel the same way. It's like, it was in this chaos. It was actually pretty nice to see so many people being unified in their feelings. It was like, we were all holding hands together. We all equally hated it. So it was like this nice harmony, sort of, in a way. It's a weird thing to say, but it almost felt nice to see so many people agreeing with each other. It was like very, I didn't see comments at all that were saying, oh, it's a perfect ending. It's like, oh, up until, of course, they released the extended cut. A lot of people were satisfied somewhat then. And then the discussions, I think, started really taking place, because then we had people that actually started to love the endings. We still had people who hated the endings. And that's, I think, when the real, you know, fighting started in the fan base. But before that, I think the fan base was actually pretty unified.
I think in some ways, like the endings and like the fact that you had three paths to go through, either like destroy, like synergy, and what's the other one?
Control,
yes. So having those three, I didn't hate that they made that choice in the ending, because there was a lot of stuff that happened before then that I did enjoy. So making that choice, it felt more like the culmination of the journey, in terms of, like, if you look at other games like Fallout 4, which wasn't so great, but it also had like the ability, like, you could finish the game with one faction. So for me, it was like, okay, so I chose a faction and that was the ending. But in other ways, I feel the vitriol and all that, because I am also, like, most of the games that I played in the past were RPGs, like old school, Neverwinter Nights, Pathfinder, like Dragon Age, all of those. And you had, like, the ending was very rich in terms of, like, your decisions.
Oh, yeah.
So I knew that not doing something or doing something a specific way would affect the ending. But then, like in Mass Effect, it was just that last decision that was actually counting for all of your actions in the game.
Yeah. That was a big problem. A lot of people just felt like their choices throughout the entire trilogy just fell flat because we didn't see the immediate effects. Like, what happened to the Krogans? What happened to the Rachni Queen? What happened to all your squad mates? You didn't get anything like that in the original ending. And that's why people felt so pissed, because it was like an entire trilogy of stories and you know, different choices that you had made, and you didn't see the effect of any of them. It was like, you know, either blue, green, or red. They were all basically the same thing. So, and you didn't see the immediate effects of your choices. So, that was definitely the problem.
Yeah. Like, the only other time I sat next to my computer in that shock was Game of Thrones Season 3 Red Wedding.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was the only other time in my life that I was like that shocked.
Yeah,
at the end of that episode, I was like,
"Feel ya." I think the finale of Game of Thrones was probably the thing that got me the worst, especially my girlfriend, because she loved Daenerys so much. Up until she just went full on mad queen, and you're like, wait, wait. This hasn't really been properly foreshadowed, in my opinion. What the hell happened right here? So. Yeah, that was not to, you know, sideline to Game of Thrones, but that was probably the most shocking to me in a bad way. It's like, what just happened?
Yes. Are you a fan of the Mass Effect books?
I'd say that I am, but I haven't read them. I know the stories of them, so I guess you could say I'm a story fan. Like, I'm a fan of the general ideas of the stories, of the lore, but I haven't read any of them in their full capacity. So maybe the truthful answer to that is no, but that's just because I haven't read them.
Yeah, the only like video game inspired books that I read was for StarCraft. Like, StarCraft in my teenage years, I was actually making maps for StarCraft. I was that big of a nerd back then. But yeah, I loved the books, and it opened like a new world for me. Like, I also read the original books inspiring the Witcher games. The books came before the game and the show.
By Andrew Sapkowski or Sapkowski.
Yeah. And like this opened up like a new world of like, okay, so I don't just have to read fantasy anymore. I can read video game inspired books now. But yeah, I didn't read the Mass Effect books, and I'd like to.
I've read some of the comics, like Evolution, I think is pretty well done. I like the story of, you know, the elusive man, Jack Harper, which was his name before. I think that could, you know, if anything, they should. If they wanted to do a prequel, I think that would be a good idea, because I think that comic was pretty good. But yeah, in the form of books, so to call it, that would be the only thing, I think. Comics.
Okay, so Alex, Mr. Holden, we talked about your past. We talked about fan questions. We talked about Mass Effect. Now I want to talk about the future. What is in the future for your channel and your brand and you? Is Mr. Halton.
I think I'm just going to keep going at it as much as I can. I'm trying to talk about other games. I'm looking forward to the Callisto Protocol. I will definitely start covering that more. I might start diving into some Dead Space, because Dead Space is getting a remake now. Hopefully that can revitalize the Dead Space universe, because I would love to see that universe, you know, get revived again. Because that also has some pretty cool lore and story. I'll start talking more about Starfield. I want to get into some more Fallout, but Starfield, a lot of science fiction stuff. And as looking at the Gamescom yesterday, there's a lot of sci-fi games coming out. So I'm looking forward to that. But basically what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to branch out to different RPGs and sci-fi games, because, you know, Mass Effect is an RPG sci-fi. So I guess that's that. I will try to find all the news I can get my hands on when it comes to Mass Effect. Just keep doing what I'm doing. Might get a new camera soon. I guess that's it for the future. I'm also building a secondary channel where I talk about movies and TV shows, but haven't really put much effort into that right now. But that's also fun. Got to have several ventures at the same time.
Okay. Wow. I so hope that Starfield doesn't disappoint. It had like a nice trailer. Not exciting trailer, but a nice trailer.
I thought it was great. That's the thing. That's like 50-50 right now on the internet. A lot of people just think it'll suck. A lot of people think it'll be amazing. I'm sort of in the middle road. I know that it's probably going to be a little more disappointing than people are expecting, like people that are super excited for it are expecting. But I also think that it's going to be better than a lot of people think. So, because, you know, like, aside from Fallout 76, I think Bethesda has a pretty good track record, even if the games are buggy as fuck. It's just, you know, Skyrim is awesome. I love Skyrim. Fallout 3 was awesome. Fallout 4, even I'd say Fallout 4 was pretty good. So, you know, I'm in that kind of club. I'm sort of in the middle ground. I think that Starfield is going to be better than a lot of people are saying, but not as amazing as some people would make you believe.
Okay. I really hope so. I really, really hope so.
At least we'll get a lot of modders that are going to make a lot of content for it. So, you know, worst case scenario, we have the modders.
Yes, just like Skyrim.
Yeah. They're going to fix the game.
Well, Alex, it was amazing to talk to you. Thank you so much for your time. Where can people find you online if they want to know more about you?
Ooh, good question. I guess Discord. We have a Discord channel. That one you would have to join. You can talk to me there sometimes. Sometimes you can reach me because I get a lot of messages. But Twitter, maybe. I talk a lot of shit on Twitter. Maybe not shit. I barely tweet there, but maybe I, you know, post a meme every now and then. But I guess those two. Yeah, Discord and Twitter.
And of course, your YouTube channel.
YouTube channel, right.